Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. I don't know if you can hear it or not, but it is pouring down rain outside. Hopefully that's not interfering too much. There's some thunder. But anyway, I hope you've had a great week. Those watching on Rumble, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and follow these videos. It helps the algorithms push it out to more people, and it's a blessing to us. Today, I've got a special interview for you with Diego Rodriguez, and he's a good friend of ours from Idaho. He now lives in Florida. But about a year ago, I sent around to the Agenda Weekly people a prayer request to pray for his grandson, Cyrus, who had been kidnapped by the Child Protection Services in Idaho, just totally unjustly. And he's going to talk about that today, and what that was like to have that happen when you've done nothing wrong, and to have the government in its full strength come after you. It's a very sobering thing, but as he talks through that story and gives us the lessons that they learned, he also has a lot of good advice for parents and grandparents at the end of things you can be doing to make sure that doesn't happen to you. But I'm going to start off by playing a clip from a presentation he made, and it's kind of dispels a lot of the myths of CPS, what we normally think of CPS as, and the reality of what it really is with the facts. A lot of us have been brainwashed and propagandized to believe, you know, government is the answer to every problem, and they always do what is right, and our military is always fighting for freedom, and the medical industry just cares about life and health and everything. And I think most of you have realized over the last 3+ years that's not true, unfortunately. Wish it was. But I think this will be very powerful for you. It's kind of a long interview, but it covers so many key details that you need to be informed about. And I think it'll be a blessing to you. And then the solutions at the end will be things you can do in case you're not doing them right now to protect you and your family. But here's the clip from a presentation he gave on the myth of CPS. And then we'll go into an interview with him. Thanks so much for joining me again this week.
Now, before I tell you the story of baby Cyrus, I need to overcome something that I call the CPS myth. Having given now over 60 interviews on the story of baby Cyrus and the story of his kidnapping, one of the things that I found right up front is that the typical American is so absolutely possessed with propaganda that they've heard for their entire life that the idea that an innocent family who's done no wrong could have their child taken away from them by police officers at gunpoint wouldn't even register in the average person's mind. Like, that's not possible. People still believe that can't happen in America. We can't have judicial tyranny in America. We can't have churches shut down in America. We couldn't have cops killing people and innocent people in America without consequence. We couldn't have these things happening in America. And when people feel that way and they think that way, you can tell them a story and they're just incredulous, regardless of how much proof you have. So yeah, I learned that I had to first deconstruct this CPS myth before people could really understand what was going on. So let me share with you what the CPS myth is. The CPS myth is basically just this idea, this belief system that people have that the only reason CPS exists, CPS being Child Protective Services, is to protect children from abusive or drug using parents. Now, I will tell you, as a pastor of an inner city church, I used to believe that. I used to think that's the reason why CPS exists. I myself have actually made phone calls to CPS and had children taken away from their families, families who were sexually molesting them, parents who were physically abusing them. And so I understand that it did and does serve that purpose to a certain percentage. The problem is people think that that is all that it does. And if you think that that's all that CPS does, like I used to think, but I got red-pilled, then I got to tell you, if that's the belief, nothing could be further from the truth. If you believe this, you are literally believing a lie. Now, we're going to show you the actual data and give you the link so you can look this up for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Look it up for yourself. Based on the government's own admission, CPS's own admission, when they ran reports on themselves, here is what they came up with. They say, and this is their statistics, not mine, that 83% of all CPS cases are completely unsubstantiated. That's right, completely unsubstantiated. So this means that all those other cases where they necessitated investigation, you know, like bruises or a broken bone or actual neglect, that was the other 17%, and many of those weren't legitimate either. They just warranted or necessitated an investigation. So the amount of parents who are truly abusive to their own children is incredibly small. Does it exist? Are there parents who are abusive to their parents? Yes, it does exist. But statistically speaking, it is incredibly small. Now, note, this is CPS's own admission. It's their own report. If you know anything about the government, you know that when they put out reports telling on themselves, it's always going to be skewed in their favor. They're not going to tell you the real truth about themselves. They're going to make themselves look better than they really are. And if they're making themselves look better than they really are and still conceding that 83% of the time they get it wrong, just think what's really going on out there in the real world. Now, where does this data come from? This comes from CPS itself. This is the actual report from April of 2021. It's called the Child Maltreatment Summary of Key Findings from childwelfare.gov. Here is the question that you got to ask yourself. Why would you continue to allow an agency to exist when they admit they're doing their job incorrectly at least 83% of the time? If you failed at your job 83% of the time, would you expect to keep your job? Would you expect people to keep giving you money? Of course not. It's absolutely ridiculous. So now why does CPS take 83% of children away from their parents? Why do they do that? Well, the answer to this you're going to see right now is the most truly disgusting thing you've ever seen. It is because they are financially incentivized to do so. It is also because CPS can now be used as a weapon by, for example, doctors to force compliance. If your doctor doesn't like you because you don't want a vaccine, because you don't trust what they're saying, because you don't want to be put on a ventilator, because you think COVID was a scam, whatever it happens to be, doctors can now weaponize CPS to force you to comply with them. Additionally, social ideologues like leftists and socialists can use CPS as a tool to destroy their ideological opponents just simply because one of your political enemies wanted to use it as a weapon against you. So who is it that CPS is targeting? Well, historically, they used to target poor people and minorities. The reason why was because they were the easiest targets. They're easy targets because they didn't have resources, they didn't have support systems, they didn't have a way to defend or fight back. I mean, if you're an 18, 19-year-old, you know, single girl, and you've got a kid or two from one or two different parents, and you're on welfare, it's very easy for them to take those children away because they're worth way more to the system, as you're about to find out right now. And that poor young girl who probably didn't do anything wrong other than she's poor has no system, no platform, no mechanism, no resources, no support mechanism or system around her to fight back. And this is how it's been for nearly 20 years. However, recent evidence points to the fact that now across America, CPS is being used as a tool to target very specifically Christians, conservatives, homeschoolers, and anti-vaxxers. If you're one of those, if you're a Christian, a conservative, a homeschooler, anti-vaxxer, and some of you might be all of those, you're a target. You have got a target on your back, and they want to take your kids away from you. This is not me trying to scare you. This is me just telling you the truth. Now, I want you to recognize that having your child forcibly or forcefully taken away from you at gunpoint is the definition of kidnap. This is the definition of it. And if you want to know what God thinks about kidnap, God already declared his judgment by telling us in Exodus that anybody who kidnaps another and either sells him or still has him when he is caught must be put to death. So if you kidnap somebody else, this is the same law against slavery, by the way, in the Bible, because this word kidnapping meant the King James Version, the authorized version, is man-stealing. If you steal a human being, and you have either the intention to sell them or you have not sold them or you have them. In either way, it is kidnapping. It is man-stealing. And the judgment by God is death. Now, modern-day terms and definition, we understand that if you kidnap for a profit, well, that's child trafficking. This is exactly what we call child trafficking. If you are kidnapping people, it's human trafficking. If you're kidnapping children, it's child trafficking. If you're doing it for profit, in other words, if somebody is making money off of the process of that child being kidnapped, that is child trafficking. And what you are going to see right now is that CPS and dozens of other agencies and bureaucracies are all getting money from the kidnapping of your children, my grandson, and everybody else around this country who has suffered at the hands of this system. And every last one of them is therefore participating in child trafficking, including the doctors, including the police officers, including the hospitals, including the CASA system, including foster care parents in the foster care system. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but they are also participating in it. And some of you might think, well, I'm a foster care parent. Well, I want you to know where that money's coming from. And I want you to know what that system is that you're actually participating in. You're going to see it tonight with your own two eyes. So in order to really get your head wrapped around this, you need to understand very quickly the history of CPS. I'll go over this very, very quickly for you. And for those who say, well, I don't even know what you're talking about CPS, because there's people here from all over the country who are on this broadcast tonight. Just note that CPS has lots of other names. Here in Florida, it's called DCF. Lots of places call it DCFS, DCS, and certain other places. But it's all basically CPS, or Child Protective Services. Really should be called Child Profiting Systems. But this all basically got started back in 1974 with a law called CAPTA. Typo right there. It's a Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act. Basically what this did is it gave the government this far-reaching authority over what they called child welfare. And it was not a good law at the time, but it was basically benign. And the reason it was basically benign is because the states had to pay for it themselves. All right, in 1980, which was, you know, a few years later, they created this Adoption Assistance and Child Welfare Act, which basically created at that time what we today call the foster care system. But again, the funding here mostly came from state governments. But all of this changed in 1997 with what is called the ASFA law, or the Adoption Safe Families Act. This law financially incentivizes every single state in the country to kidnap children for profit. And it's basically an endless source of revenue because the money now comes from Social Security Title IV. So all you senior citizens who are hearing that you're not going to get your Social Security benefits, or that they've raised the age from what, 60 to 65 to 67, now to 69, and your benefits are going down further and further and further. Well, it's because billions of dollars are going out to pay the states for kidnapping your children. Now, this was all championed by Bill and Hillary Clinton. So this is the one who championed this. Now, I'm going to show you here in this. This is the actual law. This describes the entire law and what it does, but there's a very interesting part here that you'll see, and I'll just read it to you right from the law. It says, in the case of a child who has been in foster care under the responsibility of the state for 15 of the most recent 22 months, the state shall file a petition to terminate the parental rights of the child's parents. This entire law was created so that they can do everything possible to keep your child out of your physical custody for 15 of the previous 20 months, or 15 months in a row, because as soon as that happens, you as a parent automatically lose parental rights over your kid. The child's not your child anymore. They instantly, the state now owns your child. But the question always is, well, Diego, how much money is being paid? Well, the answer is nobody knows. There have been many people who've tried to determine how much money has been transferred from Social Security Fund to the states, because it's the federal government paying each of the 50 states. And their best estimates are currently between $60 to $80 billion have been taken from Social Security funds to give to the 50 states to kidnap children. I want you to just think about what in the world that figure really means. It's absolutely insane. It is the biggest and most profitable child trafficking network and ring in the history of mankind. And now, because of ASFA, all the states are financially incentivized to kidnap children for profit. And remember, kidnapping children for profit, that's the definition of child trafficking. And all 50 states are doing this, even the alleged free states like Florida, where I live, Texas, or Idaho. I hate to tell you this, but these free states are some of the worst offenders, as we saw with Baby Cyrus. Now, let me just ask a very simple question for anybody with a logical mind. What in the world do you think is going to happen when the federal government offers a financial incentive to do anything? Well, you're obviously going to get more of it. Will there be corruption involved? Yes, of course. Will it attract bad actors, or is it going to attract kind-hearted Christians? Which one do you think? Is it going to create dependencies on those financial incentives, or is it going to encourage independence? In other words, once you get bureaucrats who are living off of those financial incentives, are they going to be very quick to try to tear those things down, or are they going to be dependent upon that money coming in and the means by which they grab that? And then finally, will it create thoroughly embedded deep state bureaucracies, or will it minimize government? I mean, just think about it. Just think about it. All right. Now, by way of example, just so you see how this works, by way of example, according to the law, according to ASPA, and according to the way that this is rolled out in all 50 states, because all 50 states are basically required to have their own version of the ASPA law. And you can just read about it when you download this document here. All the 50 states have to have one in order to get those funds. And so all 50 states do. It's the exact same thing that happened with the CARES Act. If you remember the CARES Act, everybody had to have their own version of the CARES Act at the state level, and all the legislatures were out there scrambling to get it done so they could get all that free COVID money. Same exact idea, same exact concept, and you can download that and read about it for yourself. Well, when a child is kidnapped forcefully by gun-wielding police, money is then made available to the state. When that child is then turned over to foster care, which often takes place within, you know, 30 to 60 minutes from the time those corrupt police officers kidnap that child, more money is made available at that point. Then every single month, the state gets paid for having the child in its care. Now, I know people understand if you're a foster care parent, you get money every month for every child that you have in your custody. But what you don't know is that the state you're living in gets about five times more money than you're getting every single month. So for example, let's say you are getting, or it could be 10 times up to, let's say, for example, you are receiving $500 a month per child. Well, the state that you live in is getting $5,000 a month for that same child that you're taking care of for administrative costs. I mean, it is a cash cow. And as you guys already noted, what I read to you is that after 15 consecutive months out of the parents' care, the parents lose all their parental rights and the child is then put up for adoption. And there's actually bonuses that you'll read about in the ASPA law that the federal government gives to the state for adopting those children out. So once that child's adopted, there's even more money, bonus money given. Oh, and by the way, if you can mark that child as a special needs child, and you can do so just by claiming they have ADD or ADHD, the state gets even more bonus money. So they're incentivized to take your kids, say, oh, they got ADD. Let's drug them up. Let's give them drugs. Let's give them Adderall. Let's give them Ritalin. So now we get more money from the federal government, from the federal bureaucracies, because now they are special needs. Now, I already know what some people say, but police and doctors and social workers, they would never do that. That could never happen. I understand that years and years and years of propaganda draws many people to believe that that could never happen in America, even though it happens every day, thousands of times every day. But for your consideration, I challenge you to read this book. This is a book called Ordinary Men, is written by Christopher M. Browning. It's been recommended here, recently become popular because Jordan Peterson has encouraged people to read it. And he said very specifically that reading this book will literally change your life. And he said he cautions people to read it because you don't take a book that has the power or potential to change your life lightly. And here's what it says about Ordinary Men. It's the true story of Reserve Police Battalion 101 of the German Order Police, which was responsible for mass shootings as well as roundups of Jewish people for deportation to Nazi death camps in Poland. Now, here's what he's arguing at the end of the day. He says that most of these men who were in this battalion who committed these atrocities said, these weren't horrible people. They weren't evil men. These were not demonically possessed individuals. They were just everyday, ordinary men. They were police officers. They were soldiers. They were guys that you went to church with. They were Sunday school teachers. Regular, ordinary people. But because of the dynamics of conformity, in other words, the human nature of wanting to conform to everybody else, having deference to authority, got to do what the authorities say. Ever heard that before? Just doing my job. I'm just doing my job. Ever heard that before? Role adaptation and the altering of moral norms justified their actions. How in the world could a police officer go in there and just kidnap a... Ordinary men become incredibly wicked over time if there are no consequences for their actions. Now, by the way, talking about this altering of moral norms to justify their actions, just so you know, according to pro-gay groups, the Family Equality Council, they tell us here, this is from their own report, that same-sex couples raising children are 7 times more likely than their different-sex counterparts to be raising an adopted child. So when these children are being taken away from your family, your child is being kidnapped, it is 7 times more likely that they get adopted out through CPS to a gay couple than otherwise. Because this is where gay couples get their children from. This is what's going on. Talking about altering of social norms. Now, what are some of the reasons that these cops are using and social workers to justify the kidnapping of children? Well, let me know if you've ever had a child who fit any of these descriptions right here. One example is, well, the child was sad. The house was dirty. There were crayon markings on the wall. Ever had that? The family is too religious. They go to church too much. The children have to do chores. The laundry wasn't folded. The children aren't being homed, or the children are being homeschooled. So that's educational neglect. Or maybe the child is too skinny. He's underweight. Something they call failure to thrive. If your child is just too skinny, as far as CPS is concerned, as far as a cop's concerned, that's justification to kidnap your kid. So let's talk then about this modern day CPS child trafficking ring. What does it look like in the everyday real world? Well, this is basically what the ring looks like. It starts off at the federal government, and the federal government gives money to CPS. Now, generally speaking, the federal government is giving that money to the Department of Health and Welfare in all the various states. And that department has a different name in all the 50 states. In Idaho, where baby Cyrus was kidnapped, it's called the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. But it's different in all the states. And so CPS is under that umbrella, but that money is coming from the federal government and it goes to CPS. Okay, so now what happens is, in addition to this, from CPS now being alerted to a child who they want to kidnap, they then send out these stormtroopers, these brown shirts, the Gestapo called the police, who do whatever they're told, have no morals, and are getting paid through their agency for this as well. The police go out there, kidnap your child. In many cases, ambulance companies are involved because they're going to get paid for this as well. Then, of course, these children are sent to the hospital. And once they go to the hospital, Medicaid dollars open up to them. So in addition to any direct or indirect funds that may or may not go directly to the hospital, once a child is there in a hospital, the hospital will put that child on Medicaid. They did this to baby Cyrus, and then just use that child like a debit card. Marissa tells me that they actually had a barcode on a bracelet that they put on baby Cyrus's wrist. And they just start ordering tests. Oh, let's get some blood tests. Beep. Oh, all right, let's do a urine test. Beep. Oh, let's do a fecal test. Beep. Oh, let's go ahead and run them through this x-ray. Beep. Oh, let's go ahead and order this equipment. Beep. Oh, let's go ahead and do this barium contrast test. Beep. And every single test imaginable, and they just scan it. And it's all being paid for by the federal government. Because now free money is made available as soon as that child gets put there into the hospital. After some period of time being there in the hospital, of course, that child's going to be dumped off to foster care. And foster care is going to be getting money for that child every single month. And then there are these endless programs and brand new bureaucracies that get built up. All right. So, for example, you have parental training, you have psychological evaluations, you have abuse training, you have sensitivity training, conflict resolution training. All of this stuff gets funded through Title IV Social Security funding. Oh, and by the way, all of the 50 states all have supplemental programs you'll see on other line items in the budget for the states for all these types of trainings and other trainings that are just bureaucracies that get fed once these children are kidnapped. And then, of course, the judges get paid as well. This is the ring, and this is a whole circle in the cycle that goes over. Go ahead and take a screenshot of that so you see exactly what is going on. And there's a very, very, very important point here to be emphasized that I made, but I want to make it again, because beyond direct funding from Social Security, Title IV, which you can download and read about it right here, beyond those direct payments, when a child is kidnapped and taken away from its parents, it opens up dozens of bureaucracies to additional state and federal funding. Dozens of them. So nearly each and every institution becomes eligible for additional funding. For example, hospitals and doctors get Medicaid and Medicare. Police agencies get supplemental federal aid money. Ambulance companies get direct government payments. They're going to get paid. So parents didn't pay for this, so they're going to get paid by the government for that. And then there's all these endless programs and trainings with subsidies and grants from both state and federal sources that are beyond and outside of Social Security Title IV. That's the part that blew me away once you start connecting all the dots and you see there's more money beyond just the $60 to $80 billion is coming from Social Security. There's could be double that amount. We don't know. Nobody knows. Now, who is getting funded? Who's getting their hand in the cookie jar? Well, it's literally everybody. It is the police. It's judges. It's hospitals, doctors and nurses. It's ambulance companies. It's guardian ad litem. I don't even know what that is. Well, you can look it up. It's something really stupid. It's the CASA programs, the lobbying organizations. I've heard people say, no, Diego, CASA programs are volunteer. Nope. There's government funding for them. Not only at the federal level, but at state levels. There's additional bureaucrats. CPS themselves is getting paid. And of course, the black market and sex traffickers are making money off of these children because even CPS themselves admit that the greatest source of sex trafficking in America comes through children lost through the foster care system. And you can look at those statistics as well. There's been a documentary made about it called These Little Ones. And you can see there's literally millions of children who have just disappeared, vanished off the face of the earth once they go into the CPS system and foster care subsequently after that.
Diego Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, brother. So good to see you again.
So good to see you. We were good friends for years in Idaho, about 10 years. We lived out there together people watching this. And so I know Diego, and this story we're going to talk about here, many of you might have heard of, because about a year ago, I posted the video on Agenda Weekly about baby Cyrus. It was a baby that had been taken by CPS, and just the story of what had happened with the actual video footage. And we'll have that below for those that haven't seen that, where you can watch the live footage of what the police did to take a nursing baby from her mother in a just unbelievable way. But Diego, my friend, he is the grandfather. That was his grandson that happened to. And we're going to talk about that today in hopes of educating you about what's really going on. You just watched, before Diego came on, the myth of CPS. I hope that was enlightening for you. I hope you realize, oh my goodness, I didn't know much of that. I know I didn't. I think a lot of us, if you haven't had a relationship where you've got thrown into this, you don't know what's going on. You don't know how the system works. You don't know how it's corrupt, but we should expect that it's corrupt. Why? Because man is corrupt. And we've seen over the last decade, especially in the last 3 years, how corrupt government can be and the medical industry can be. People that are supposed to protect and cherish life are abusing it for money. So we see all that, but this is an important story today. And I hope it's a blessing to you. And toward the end, we'll get into more what you can do to protect your children, your grandchildren, neighbors, friends, people you go to church with, to educate them about what's going on, because it's very serious and very sobering. So Diego, I'd like you just to start from your perspective, just tell us, you know, what happened to your grandson, baby Cyrus.
Well, thank you again for having me here, Curtis. And I appreciate you sharing your heart with all the people here, because it is a very important story, not just because it happened to me, but us recognize, when I say me, I mean my family, but we recognize how important it is to everybody who cares about the institution of the family, which is God's greatest institution that he created here. This is all seeking to undermine that. I don't know anybody who's been so dedicated as you to demonstrate this through the documentaries you've done and the work that you've done, showing truly the wickedness behind communism and all the other isms out there are attacking the family. You destroy the family, you destroy the church, you destroy the church, you destroy the kingdom of God in the earth, and the effect that we have in terms of God's kingdom in this earth. And this is exactly what this strikes at the heart of. And much like you, I didn't know any of this. I mean, what the people just saw there in that presentation that I gave, I didn't know any of that. Maybe little bits and pieces, but I didn't know the totality of it, just like you, until it happened to our family. And if we can help your subscribers and others avoid this happening to them, then that's, you know, almost one of the greatest things that we can do here, because yes, this can happen to anybody as long as you are physically present in the United States. If you are part of this country, this is the only country in the world that we know of, by the way, where the government subsidizes child trafficking, like straight up subsidizes it from the federal treasury and gives the money to the states in order to pay for child trafficking. Are other countries involved where they do similar sinister things? Sure, but nobody is doing this to the tune of billions and billions of dollars over 20 plus years like we're doing here in the United States. It is a statistical fact that the United States of America is the most dangerous country on planet Earth to give birth to a child. There's no place more dangerous. It is safer to give birth in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Venezuela or any other place than in the United States of America. And that's on two fronts. On this front of abortion, where if you're pregnant, there's no place where we kill more babies than America. And on child trafficking, once that baby's born, there's no place that takes more children, that forcefully steals using the force of government more than the United States of America. This is where it happens. This is the tip of the spear. This is where it all goes down. Wow. And so, this is an incredibly important issue. And as it happened to us, what people will see is, as I tell the story, as you asked me to tell right now, is it's for no reason whatsoever. It's not for any legitimate reason. So that big myth that people there was like, oh, well, CPS is just here to take care of children, to protect children who are being abused by drug addict parents. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I am positive that one of the main reasons that this went viral, you know, the video that you have shared there below has been seen online over 15 million times. So this has gone viral like an internet meme. So millions of people have seen this, and it is going everywhere. But one of the reasons why I believe that it went viral was because my daughter and son-in-law, much like, you know, your children, they don't look like drug addicts. They don't look like horrible. They look like a clean, godly Christian couple, which is exactly what they are. And so when people see this beautiful, clean-cut family, no tattoos, no drugs, big smiling faces, and they go, oh my goodness, if that happened to them, it could happen to any one of us. And people, I think, saw that and recognized that.
And that's why your video we just watched was so powerful, because it makes everything start to make sense. No, they're doing this unjustly because there's big bucks in it. That to me really opened my eyes, because everyone would say logically, well, why would they go to all this effort when it's work for them? It doesn't do anything. Unless you were really guilty, why would they come after you? I mean, that's what you think in your heart. But then when you realize, no, they might make $1 million or more off that child. Oh, then are they going to kidnap the child? Of course they're going to, as often as possible that they can get away with. But anyway, continue. But that when you bring the money into it, like anything in life, you bring the money into the vaccine, you realize, okay, of course they're forcing people to take an experimental shot because there's billions of dollars in that. That's logical sense. But I think most of us did not realize, Diego, before you explained it so clearly, there was that kind of money in the CPS system in what they were doing. I didn't even know that. I've never heard that before.
And the crazy part about it, Curtis, is that none of this is conspiracy theory stuff. Anybody can spend 30 minutes on the internet and look it up and see the law itself. Anybody right now can go to the government website and go look up the ASFA Act, the Adoptive Safe Families Act, which was passed by Bill and Hillary Clinton in 1997. And yes, I said it that way on purpose. And you can read it for yourself. Anybody can see the law that exists, the money and the funds that have been made available through Social Security Title IV. So all the people who, all the grandparents and the elderly who might be listening to this, who expect to get their Social Security, and they're always being told that their Social Security is going to go away and that's not going to be paid out. Well, it's because one of the reasons why is because billions of dollars are going to kidnap your grandchildren. Billions of dollars are going out from that fund in order to steal children. Literally billions. And so, yes, there's that reality. And this is just what is going on in America, unfortunately. And you said it's hard to imagine until you understand the money. It is the money, but it's also power. It is power to take control of people's lives. You know, the Bible says that all that's in the world is the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And we can really kind of boil that down to what we call a money, sex, and power. The most seductive of those three things is power. That people will do anything to have power over others. Yeah. It is the number one thing people want. And then if you take a look at the, if people believe in and recognize there is an industry of child trafficking and pedophilia and all this stuff that's going on there that I think people have been, you know, the term that they use nowadays in the world is red pilled. They've seen this going on with national scandals from, you know, Balenciaga or however you pronounce that, you know, to Target and to all these other companies they're seeing who are just being open about the LGBTQ agenda that they're pushing on people and about child trafficking that they're pushing and trying to normalize pedophilia. And people know that that's out there going on. So how can you normalize something that's so repulsive to the, you know, our human condition, our human nature, something so repulsive? Well, you have to use power, force to influence people to do that. And that is exactly what we're seeing going on. And until you understand that aspect behind the scenes, it's just the assumption, oh yeah, CPS is just protecting kids from being abused. And the most shocking statistic, which you guys saw there, to me, because we both know that when the government puts out statistics, if you know anything about statistics, you know that the government never puts out honest statistics. They're just not going to tell the truth about themselves. So when you see government-issued statistics that makes the government look bad, then you realize the actual statistics were even worse than that, that the best they could do to spin the numbers still made them look bad. And when they spun the numbers, they still said 83% of all children taken by CPS were all taken under false pretenses. There was no reason to take them whatsoever. They admit that. That's their admission.
Incredible. Yeah.
That's their documentation. That's not me making that claim. That's not other people who are anti-child traffickers making that claim. That's the government itself telling us, yeah, we mess up, you know, 83% of the time.
Amazing.
How could that be? How can that be? But there's no consequences for them. The 83% of the time, we're talking they've made billions of dollars off of that 83%, and nobody's ever done anything about it. There's not a judge, a police officer, a doctor, a hospital, a foster care parent, a foster care system, a Department of Health and Welfare, or a Department of Family and Children's Services. It's named something different in everywhere, as you guys know. Sometimes it's called CPS, sometimes DCS, DFCS. Every single state has a different thing that they call it. No single authority figure has ever faced any consequences for that 83% of the time they destroyed people's lives.
Wow, it's crazy.
So just think about that. It's hard to imagine. Now, in the case of my daughter, it all just boiled down to something literally as simple as, and of course, you've given people a link so they can watch the videos themselves. But to give them the Reader's Digest version, all that simply happened was that at 7 months old, my daughter began to introduce solid foods to my grandson's diet. He'd been nursed 100% up to that point, and he had a hard time with solid foods. He started vomiting, and he started something that has now been diagnosed as cyclical vomiting syndrome. That is actually not uncommon, but it is, you know, relatively rare. It's not only in children, but even adults have this condition. And at the end of the day, the medical community doesn't know what causes it, because believe it or not, doctors are not God. They don't know everything, contrary to what, you know, they would want you to believe. They don't know what causes everything. And so it's this process where every 5 to 7 days he would go on this vomiting binge, where he would be vomiting literally, this is not an exaggeration, even though it's hard to imagine, 50 to 100 times a day, just vomiting nonstop. And so obviously my daughter and son-in-law did everything they could in their power. We were praying for him, anointing with him oil. They were going to different specialists. They never went to an allopathic hospital because it's just not something that we support. But they were going to naturopaths, they were going to homeopaths, they were going to chiropractors, they were going to a family friend who's a naturopathic, you know, doctor, and doing everything possible to determine what they could do to get baby Cyrus healed of this condition, or so he would stop vomiting. And at one point in time, they were at a functional medicine clinic because they were trying everything. And they went to a functional medicine clinic there in Idaho, which incidentally was called Functional Medicine of Idaho. And a nurse there told them that after a vomiting episode baby Cyrus had, that he was significantly dehydrated and needed to go to St. Luke's Hospital, which is the major allopathic hospital, as you know, there in Boise, Idaho. They didn't want to go. But this nurse said, well, it's the only place in the entire state where they can put an IV in an infant, and you're going to need to go there because he's significantly dehydrated, and you can't just give him Pedialyte or something like that like you've been doing in the past. We need to get him hydrated, and as soon as you get him hydrated, you can bring him back here to the clinic, and then we will continue, you know, to try to diagnose him and see what we can do to help him. So with that in mind, and under the guise of this being a very quick trip, we're going to go to the hospital for a couple hours, come right back after he's hydrated and take it from there. They made, which ultimately became one of the worst decisions ever, which was to go ahead and go to that hospital to get baby Cyrus hydrated. And from there, everything just spiraled out of control. And in short, you know, people need to understand hospitals, allopathic hospitals specifically, are not about your health. They're all about just the same thing, you know, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. If COVID didn't teach that to people, then there's nothing that I can say that will teach that to you. If you are just, you just think that doctors who statistically kill more people in the United States of America than anything other than cancer and heart disease, right? It's the third leading cause of death in America are allopathic doctors in allopathic hospitals. Through, you know, malpractice, essentially, kill 250 to 400,000 people in America every year. That's their statistic from Johns Hopkins University that they've given us. And so only cancer and heart disease kill more people than that. So just think about that. But anyhow, all that being said, they took my grandson there. And as soon as they got there, it was just exactly like we all know that happens in hospitals. The doctors, is your baby vaccinated? No, our baby's not vaccinated. Well, then everything turns hostile. And so once everything turned hostile from there, you know, they threatened, if you take this baby out of this hospital before we give you permission to go, because we're God, we say everything, you have to obey us or else you will pay the consequences. Well, with a threat of CPS being called, and my children, just like yours, were all homeschooled their entire life. So we all understood the basic concerns of CPS and all of that. We didn't know the extent of it, but we understood the basic concerns. So under the threat of having CPS called, my daughter and son-in-law stayed at the hospital. Even though they didn't have insurance and they were racking up a bill, which is exactly the whole point of going to the hospital in the first place. They just want to rack up that bill. Well, even though they decided to stay, the doctor called CPS anyhow. And the next day, CPS shows up to interview Marissa. Now, what we've also learned is that this hospital and most allopathic hospitals across the country, and for those who don't know what I mean when I say allopathic hospital, in short, it's just the big government subsidized hospital in your city. And every city has one. Any city of any significant size has a big hospital that's subsidized by Medicare and Medicaid and government payments. And it's where, you know, the vast majority of people go when they think of the hospital. It's not a private institution. It's not a private clinic. It is many times it's a nonprofit. Sometimes it's a private hospital, but the vast majority, but at least a significant portion of their revenue comes from government subsidies. And so it's a pseudo government entity, and they're just intertwined and intertangled with the government in unbelievable ways. Most of them all have a CPS social worker in office on site at the hospital. So St. Luke's brother has a social worker from CPS on site at the hospital. So instantaneously, whenever they got a hot prospect, they can go right in there and get that baby, get that child taken away from the family. It's absolutely disgusting. Yeah. Who's paying for that? Is the hospital paying for it? Is CPS paying for it? At the end of the day, you're paying for it because your tax dollars are paying for all of this. If it's from CPS or if it's at the hospital through payments that the hospital gets, the government is paying for it at all of it. You know, because one of the things we learned is that as soon as a child is taken by CPS and they're in the custody of a hospital, and when I say custody, I mean possession, because the hospital takes they don't like the word custody because to them, custody is a legal term. But when I say custody, I just mean that they have physical possession of that child. And once they have a physical possession of that child, my daughter Marissa, who saw it with herself, will tell you, they put a band around that child that has a barcode on it. And they literally scan that barcode like you scan items at Walmart at the checkout and just order up everything they can imagine because now that child's on Medicaid. So, child's on Medicaid, beep. Okay, let's do a blood test, beep. Okay, let's order, these exams, beep. Let's order these tests, beep. Let's order this equipment. And they're just scanning that child like a debit card because the government's paying for it all.
Wow.
Now, we've tried to get discovery on exactly how much they made off of my grandson. And we don't have the final figures, but we know for a fact that Medicaid has paid a minimum of $30,000 to St. Luke's Hospital for all that scanning they did. And who knows how much more. And we have that as part of a lawsuit. And so we know that at least that much money was made for them having baby Cyrus for just 6 days. And the longer they keep him, the more money they make. Right. But anyhow, long story short is baby Cyrus, after a couple of days, they couldn't find anything wrong with him. So they sent him home with the parents and they tried everything. He was there for 4 days, I believe. And then, of course, they sent him home and said, well, we're going to send him home only if you agree to take baby Cyrus back to the clinic you were at and have follow-up appointment with the nurse that we'll schedule for you. And they said, that's fine. We don't have a problem. We're trying to figure out what's wrong. So the following week, which was Monday, they go back to the same functional medicine of Idaho. They're with a new nurse other than the nurse they had been with before. And this new nurse was, you know, handpicked and selected by the doctor from St. Luke's Hospital. And that's Dr. Natasha Erickson from St. Luke's Hospital. And so this is now Dr. or nurse Aaron Dykstra, functional medicine of Idaho, who noted that when baby Cyrus showed up for this follow-up appointment, that he had lost 30 grams. Now, 30 grams is like 1.23 ounces. So it's a very insignificant amount. However, for a baby, anything is a lot. You know, at this point, he's 10 months old. So they come back on Thursday for a follow-up appointment, and he still had not gotten any better in terms of his weight. And so hospitals don't care about the holistic approach. They just care about these metrics that they look at because the government knows everything, and they know exactly how many grams that your child should weigh at what point in time, you know, in their life there is, because they know everything. So they have their little chart that unless he's at this level in terms of his weight, then they call it a failure to thrive, which is a medical term that they can actually use for pretty much anything. And so if he can be classified as failure to thrive, then it gives them what they believe to be the legal authority to take any child at any time. Well, that was on Thursday. The nurse says, we want you to come back again tomorrow because he still hasn't gained any weight. And I just need to do a weigh-in before the weekend. So let's just weigh your son and bring him in tomorrow, 10 a.m. I don't even need to be here. My assistant can do the weigh-in, but we need you to come tomorrow. And they're, that's fine. They didn't care. No big deal. And the, even the nurse played it down. He's like, it's no big deal. I don't even have to be here. Just come tomorrow and let's just get the weigh-in done before we go into the weekend. So all this sounds so benign. But when you understand what's going on behind the scenes, you understand that this is all set up. And so it sounds very benign. Well, the next day, my daughter wakes up and she felt under the weather. She was feeling kind of sick. And if you remember, even last year in 2022, all the protocols at all these hospitals were still, if you're sick, don't come to a hospital. If you're sick, don't come because you got COVID. You're going to kill everybody. And so everybody was about, you know, stay home, don't come in. And my daughter woke up feeling a little under the weather with a sore throat. So she calls the clinic and says, you know, I got an appointment at 10 a.m. and I just need to postpone it to maybe later today or Monday or Tuesday or whenever. Well, nobody answered the phone. So she just left a message at the clinic and she went to sleep. You're a grandparent. You know how often your kids are up all night with the kids screaming and in this case, throwing up. And so, you know, they're going to sleep whenever they can get a few hours of shut eye. And so she goes back to sleep. Well, the clinic gets the message. They try to call her back. She doesn't answer the phone. And that simple action of her not answering the phone took what sounded like something so benign. And before the end of the day, it ended all in violence and abduction. Because within 20 minutes of missing that appointment, and it wasn't missed, she canceled it. And it wasn't canceled for no reason. She called in advance to say, I'm feeling sick, so I'm not going to come in. So the appointment was scheduled for 10 o'clock. The medical records show that at 10:20, 20 minutes after it was scheduled for 10 o'clock, this nurse calls CPS. And that phone call is, what we say is one call does it all. Because with one phone call, social workers and CPS are involved. Police officers are involved. The force of government is involved with one phone call. From there, the police officers, you know, show up to my house looking for baby Cyrus. They're making fun, and they come to my house because our children have the wisdom to not put their actual address on any of their documentation because we've taught them that for 20 years. So don't put your actual address. Don't let people find you. So they put my address, which at the time, Curtis, so folks understand, we lived in one home and I had my company office in another house. So instead of having a regular office, which was, you know, in an industrial park or something like that, I simply rented a house around the corner from our home where we lived. And in there, I had my studio, and we had all of our company run out of there because it just made more sense to be around the corner. But it was a house and not an office, but it was only used for my business. And so that was the address that we all used. It was an actual address. So if anybody looked it up, oh, there's a home there. But we just ran my office out of there. Nobody actually lived there. Well, they came to that house, the police officers. And incidentally, when they came, we were packing to move because we were getting ready to move from Idaho to Florida. And the cops show up asking for baby Cyrus. And of course, they lie in their reports. I know this might be shocking for some viewers, but I hate to tell you this, people, police officers lie. They do it continually. Now, I'm not one of these guys who hates all cops. I'm someone who hates tyrants. I'm against a tyrant in any form in which it comes, whether it's a preacher, a parent, a politician, a police officer, or anybody. I don't care who it is. I'm against tyrants. And yes, tyranny unfortunately exists in law enforcement, particularly when they are being paid for that tyranny and they're financially incentivized to do so. So these cops lie in their report saying, we knew for a fact that baby Cyrus was in that home and Mr. Rodriguez would not allow us to see the baby, even though we knew he was in there. Well, they're just lying through their teeth. Not only did they not know he was in there, but he's never there. Nobody lives in that house, not even me. It's a business office. They're just lying through their teeth. But anyhow, from there, it went on through the night where they were looking for baby Cyrus. They put out a BOLO, which is a police term for be on the lookout for Levi. Levi is my son-in-law, his truck or my cars or any cars that were registered to that house. And they ultimately, and this is not paranoia, this is what they said on their own police report, they ultimately did an illegal cell phone ping on my son-in-law's cell phone in order to triangulate where he was and then sent police forces to that area until they found his truck. And so that night, we were at a friend's house having dinner because it was a close friend of ours and a business associate. And this was going to be our very last meal that we were going to share with him before we left town the following Tuesday. Remember, this is Friday night and my family's leaving on Tuesday. That's it. We're out. So it was our final dinner with him. And so Marissa felt better enough. She still felt under the weather, but you know, we had planned this dinner for a few weeks. And our friend was also a former police officer. He's a retired Marine and police officer. And she wanted to talk to him about that day's events, how the police came to my house, how CPS was calling her, and how she went, what in the world's going on? Well, should I be concerned? So we went over to his house, had a good time, had dinner there. My entire family was all there with him, and we're all sharing this dinner. Unbeknownst to us, they'd run a cell phone ping on my son-in-law's phone, and cops are all waiting around that area looking for that truck, and one had found his truck, and they just sat there and waited for his truck to leave. So they sat there for hours just waiting for his truck to leave. And you say, well, they must have been doing something terrible. They didn't do anything. All that happened was baby Cyrus lost 30 grams from vomiting. And the nurse made a phone call to start this entire process. And now we know why all these processes start. But I will say this. We have reason to believe that there was an additional reason why they enhanced their search. And that is because myself, along with my friend Ammon Bundy, who probably some of the people who are in your audience know who he is. We were at the forefront of the pushback against all the COVID tyranny that happened there in Idaho for years. And the police officers knew who we were by face and name, and they hated our guts because we'd protested them. People had been arrested in Idaho. Like, for example, a mother who was arrested for just simply going to the park. It was a national story all across the country that in Meridian, Idaho, a mother was arrested for going to the park. And Ammon and myself and, you know, 100 other patriots showed up to that police officer's house 3 hours later and had a peaceful protest in front of his home, which is our First Amendment right to do. And it's also the most peaceful way to keep these people accountable. Well, they hated us for doing that, but it worked. It worked because we got from our whistleblowers inside the force there told us that when that happened, cops all across the country were terrified that that would happen to them. And they said, we're never doing that ever again. And it didn't. And so it was a peaceful and successful way to bring accountability to tyrants. And they hated us for that. And these cops who were in the exact same department all of a sudden show up to my house looking for baby Cyrus and just go, oh, it's that guy. It's this family. Now we have reason to believe that they were going to double up on their efforts to harm our family because it's political retribution at that point. And we don't have proof of that. We only assume it to be the case. But the proof that we have that lends us to believe that is when we require or when we requested in the process of fighting back in the initial court case, our attorneys requested discovery, which was demanding that that Meridian Police Department give us all of the internal communication, including emails and any other messaging they had, that would show my name or Ammon Bundy's name in connection with that lawsuit, or excuse me, in connection with that them taking baby Cyrus. The day before they had to deliver all that to us, which if they did would be not only incriminating, but it would break through the protection that those police officers have, meaning that we could not only sue the police department, but we could sue the individual officers as individual citizens. And that protection in the law is gone because it shows malice on their behalf. The day before they had to provide all that documentation to us legally, they just dropped the case. So we celebrated, you know, a great miracle that took place. But we also recognize that, isn't that something that the day before they had to provide all this evidence to us, they dropped the case rather than presenting that evidence to us. It's pretty telling. Anyhow, brother, at the end of the day, those police officers found us through an illegal cell phone ping, which is illegal. Police departments are doing it all across the country. But every time one of those cases has gone to the Supreme Court has always held up the Fourth Amendment, saying that this is illegal. But even though it's illegal, ladies and gentlemen, newsflash, it's illegal, but nothing happens to the police officers who use it. So even though it's illegal, there's no consequences. So they just keep doing it over and over and over again. So for people who think that this is just the stuff of, you know, like spy movies and thrillers and fictional books and all that kind of stuff. No, they're doing this to everyday citizens. They did it to my son-in-law. We've got the documentation to prove it. Well, at that point, brother, that is when the police showed up. They pulled over my son-in-law, and then you guys can all watch the video. And I think many people have seen it from there. So rather than me tell the story, they can just watch the video and see what happened themselves. But they violently abducted my grandson. They took him away by force. They did so. Now, just to imagine the hypocrisy, you guys can watch the video yourselves, where my daughter lets them know that my grandson cannot take any other food other than her breast milk. And so they are claiming that we need to take your child away from you because you are endangering your own child. And then my daughter's like, well, you can't take him away from me because I need to nurse him or he can't eat. It doesn't matter. We're taking him away anyhow. So who's endangering that child? They willfully and knowingly endangered that child, but there's no consequences for them. Yeah. And here's why they had to do that. You guys can watch in the video, and a lot of people don't understand why this happened. But my daughter said, it's fine if you want to take him to the hospital, but just let me be with him. Let me be with him. I will go with you. And initially, the police officers promised that they would do that. But you can watch in there that it was all a trick, because once they got her in private with all the cameras that were filming him away and she was inside that ambulance all by herself with baby Cyrus, the entire story changed. And they said, give us your child or you're going to jail. Give us your child right now or you're going to be arrested and you are going to jail. And they threatened to harm baby Cyrus. They said, give us that child so no further harm comes to him. They're threatening, we're going to harm your child if you don't give him to us. And so they did forcefully take baby Cyrus away. They cuffed my daughter, put her in handcuffs, took her to jail that night. I had to bail both of my daughters out of jail that night for doing absolutely nothing wrong. And people don't understand, well, why didn't they just let her go? And the reason why is simple. Once you understand what you guys saw here, had my daughter Marissa gone with baby Cyrus to the hospital, then they can't make any money, none, because that child is no longer in the custody of the state, but it's still with the parents. As long as the parents are there present, there's no exchange of money. They get no money. Nothing happens. Yeah. You have to take the baby away from the parents. If the parents are there, no money is exchanged. Yeah. And so that is what's going on when people watch that video and they go, but I don't understand. Why would they do that? Police officers wouldn't do anything unless there's something wrong. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, for those who still cannot imagine that the police would do something wrong and that hospitals would do something wrong and that they would do something in any way that is harmful to a child, they knew that there was nothing wrong with baby Cyrus. The police knew, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare knew, and St. Luke's Hospital knew. And we know this because it's documented in the paperwork, because the paperwork actually states that they had already found a foster parent to take baby Cyrus that night immediately. And just so you guys know how fast this takes place, they will take your child away from you, process the paperwork through either a hospital or the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. They got to check all their boxes to get their money, and then immediately take that child and put it in foster care. It could happen in 15 to 30 minutes, maybe an hour, but within a very short period of time, that child is in foster care. And why that's so important is because they're getting paid twice. When they take your child away, they do so under the guise of something called imminent danger. And this imminent danger clause exists in all 50 states. And what it means is your child is about to die or suffer irreparable physical harm if they don't take that child away from the parents. So if police officers actually used that, I think most of us would agree that that's probably okay to do. In other words, if you've got drug addict parents or abusive parents who are about to kill a child, you know, they've abused them so bad, they're about to murder that child, then yes, everybody, including me, I want the police to take that child away from someone who's about to harm them. Because it doesn't matter if it's a parent or if it's a stranger. If a child is about to be murdered, if a human is about to be murdered, I want the police to step in and prevent that. That's what a police officer is supposed to do. They're supposed to prevent that, not cause harm. They're supposed to prevent harm. But in this case, they're taking perfectly innocent parents and perfectly healthy children and taking them away just because they get paid. And they're calling it imminent danger. And there's no imminent danger, evidently, when you can take a child away from its parents and dump it off at a stranger's house within minutes, saying it was in so much danger, it needed to be with a doctor or the baby was going to die. So let's just dump it off with a stranger and just leave it with someone who knows nothing about it. And that's in the hospital's medical report. Yeah. So the hospital knew, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare knew, and the police knew. They all knew. It's in their own report. Amazing. And when the doctor who reviewed baby Cyrus, when they took that baby and went straight to the hospital, because it's part of their process, they got to check all those boxes. The doctor, and we have this on camera, on the police officer's body cam. The doctor says it is a perfectly stable child. And in the report, they said that there was no life threats that were seen, and that the baby was perfectly healthy, that this is a healthy child with no interventions and no life threatens. Their life is not threatened at all. This is in the report. So the police knew it. The doctor said so. So the hospital knew it. And the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare had already prepared a foster care parent. So the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, or CPS, as we would know them, all three of them knew. Yeah. They all knew.
It was payback.
Now, you guys can all see this and watch the videos and think, this is unbelievable. I can't believe it. But I got terrible news for everybody. Baby Cyrus's case is nowhere near one of the most egregious cases that happened. There are much more egregious cases that happened than what happened to baby Cyrus. Now, if it happens to you, nothing could be more egregious. But if you just want to compare apples to apples, you know, many people have suffered way worse. Idaho is one of the least populated states in the country. It's only 1.789 million. I think now, while all the Californians moving in, it's like 1.8 million or something like that. So it's a small state. And even in a state as small as Idaho, this kidnapping is taking place four times a day, every single day in Idaho. Every single day. This is happening four times a day across the entire state. Yeah. In big states like where I live now, in Florida, it's something like 19,000 times a year. So it's, you know, dozens of times every single day. That's happening over and over and over again. What I want to share with your audience that is so critical is it used to be for years. Now, all this began in 1997. And of course, as you know, when there's no consequences, things get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And that's what we've seen happen here with CPS. But every single year, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And all these departments all across these states are seeing how much more money they can earn year after year after year. It's free money. It's a slush fund. The more kids they can kidnap and steal, the more money they make. And then this just feeds all these other interconnected systems for child trafficking, because it is government subsidized child trafficking. As you guys already saw in the presentation, the federal government gives money to the state government every single time a child is kidnapped. And what I was mentioning earlier is when they kidnap the child, they make money, and then they make a second payment once they hand that child off to CPS. So there's two payments made there, and then they're making money every single month where that child is kept in that system. And if they can keep that child in the system for 15 months consecutively, read the law yourself, as soon as 15 months that child is held outside of the parent's custody, automatically, according to the law, parents will lose parental rights, period. It's over. You'll never see your kid ever again, period. And there's no turning back.
Wow.
So that's what their goal is to get. But like I said, back in the day, they used to target, and I don't like this term. I think it's a dumb term. I don't believe in it, but I know people use this term, minorities. It used to be minorities, black people, Hispanic people. I don't believe in any of those terms, but people understand what those terms mean. They were the ones being targeted because they were mostly single mothers who didn't have a support network. They were impoverished, and they could just take these children, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. And they feasted off of that for 20 plus years. However, the anecdotal evidence that we've seen over the last 3 years, particularly since the COVID nonsense has been going on, is that they are now targeting Christians and conservatives and political activists, people who open up their voice and speak out against the system. And the reason for this is because COVID demonstrated to them that they can get away with anything. They can put pastors in jail, no consequences. They can persecute Christians, no consequences. They can come against political targets, up to including the president of the United States, who's just been indicted, no consequences. They can do anything they want against the political right, and there's no consequences. So if we have enemies who are political enemies who speak out, we can use this system to shut them down. And just like for you guys who might remember, in the Obama years, the IRS was weaponized against churches and Christian organizations and right-wing organizations. And that is now a fact, not a conspiracy theory. And there were no consequences against them other than a slap on the hand. And they allegedly changed their internal protocol so that doesn't happen again. But nobody lost their job. Nobody had to pay anybody back. But they did target Christians and conservatives. We know that for a fact. It's just part of known history here in recent history in America. We now have the same type of anecdotal evidence that they are using CPS in the last 3 years to target Christians, conservatives, particularly homeschoolers, and those who would voice their political opinion. And I mention that because that kind of sounds to me like the Agenda Weekly audience, Christians and conservatives and homeschoolers and people who would fight back against the tyranny. That means that this audience is being targeted right now. And if you ever get on their radar screen, they're going to come after you. And I am not trying to scare you. I'm just telling you the truth. This happened to me and my family. And I can tell you right now that I literally would not wish this on my worst enemy, that this was the most difficult thing I've ever experienced in my entire life. And it is an emotional weight that virtually no human can bear.
Yeah.
Can't tell you the weight of it. And then the secondary weight of it is that after we got my grandson back, and Curtis, is going to be hard for me to say this, I'm going to try to do my best to do so without like either crying or just breaking up. But after we got our grandson back, thousands, this is not an exaggeration, brother, but thousands of people contacted me through our website who had their children taken from them. Many of them still are gone and lost. And the message that they sent to me repeatedly was, "You saved your grandson. Can you help me save my child? Because I haven't seen him in 3 years, in 2 years, and sometimes as recent in 6 months or whatever have you." And they send me their stories. And brother, you can only read one or two stories before emotionally you're just so burdened down that you can't handle it. And then it's like that weight of so thousands of children and families destroyed, and they're begging you for your help. And I can't help them all.
No, I know.
And what can you do?
But people, just like everything is changing in our country, everything has been weaponized. And we've seen that. That's all we talk about here the last 2.5 years is all the different things we see where, you know, the FBI is not worrying about organized crime in America anymore. It's worrying about people that want to make America great again. It's worried about the mothers that would dare say, "I don't like what my child's being taught." That's who we're going after. So that's what this is. But when you see the money machine behind it, it makes sense. And then one other point that was mentioned in the video at the beginning, but I want to bring it up before you start talking about solutions. millions of these kids have been lost in the system. I know it said that at the beginning. Think about that. That's kids that were taken away. Their parents are trying to find them, and they don't even CPS. They don't know where they went. They got lost in the shuffle of the system. What have you learned? I know you have a list we're going to put below of some key points they need to think about to help protect their loved ones, but talk about that for a minute, what they can do to hopefully avoid this in their life.
Is an excellent question. And to emphasize, before I answer that question, to emphasize the point you just made, it's not just having your child taken away from you for a couple of months, a year, 2 years, which is just devastating, yes, alone as it is. But what you just mentioned, even though the average person couldn't wrap their head around that, is literally the truth, that these children are disappearing. Millions of them documented to have just disappeared in the system. They go into foster care, they're just disappeared. And people can look this up on their own. I don't recommend you use Google, but Google it. You know, search for it on the internet, whatever browser you want to use. Children lost and who've disappeared in foster care and CPS. There's articles all over the country for years about this. And so what you just said is what happens to them. So I can tell you that people who've reached out to us, who've had their children taken away from them and never seen them again, they have told me that they would literally rather know that their child is dead than to not know what has happened to them.
Of course.
Because they said that is a fate worse than death.
Yes.
Are they out there? So, you know, if your child was taken from you when they were 1 or 2 years old, you know, and 10 years later, you wouldn't even know what they look like. So you would rather just know that you know, their lives were taken and they're no longer here with us. They're with the Lord, rather than to not know and to have that, you know. And I'm only bringing this up right now because I want people to understand the severity of it. Because if you don't understand the severity, people will not take the necessary action in their lives to avoid it from it happening. Because we are just so propagandized in this country that we will do anything to conform to the mold and to just kind of, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. No, these things that you're saying, Curtis, they couldn't be true. You know, there's no communism in our country. And you know, the government would never do these terrible things. The FBI are the greatest people ever. The CIA doesn't do bad things. You know, they would not be at the cause of terrorist activity around the world. They prevent terrorism. And people can't imagine those things. And if you believe them, you've got a tinfoil hat on. And it's just, you know, the world we've been raised in. And this is the unfortunate nature of it. But there are steps you can take to prevent this from happening. And many of them are simple. And some of them sound drastic. And so I'm going to go ahead and share a handful of them with you guys. If you want to take some notes, feel free to do so. But the number one thing I could share with you, and I mean this with all of my heart, the number one single most important thing that you can do to ensure this never happens to you is to never again set foot in an allopathic hospital ever again in your life. And I mean that. And the most important thing is, do not give birth to your children in an allopathic hospital. That is a greater gamble than taking your life savings and going to Las Vegas and just throwing it on the craps table. We're Christians. We don't believe in doing that. But that would be a safer thing for you to do than to give birth in a hospital anywhere in this country. And I am not exaggerating. I wish I was, but I'm not. As soon as you go there, in any hospital, they're going to want you to make sure your children are vaccinated, make sure you do everything they say you have to do. There's plenty of reasons. You know, my daughter Marissa is now a certified doula, brother. After all this, she's become very passionate about natural health and about doing things God's way. And once you start understanding and learning about birth and the birthing process, and about, you find that everything we do in America about how people are giving birth is all wrong and destructive. You know, that the vast majority of C-sections, which is, I don't remember what percentage is it in America, it's outrageous, are not necessary. They just make more money off of them. You know, the shots that people are given, you know, all the different things that women are given in the process are actually harmful to the baby, harmful to her. They create the problems that they later say that you have to fix. And if you just have a home birth, a birth in a natural birthing clinic that is connected to, say, you know, an emergency clinic in case there is a necessity for someone to have a true emergency C-section, which would really be a very small percentage of the time. But we know those things happen. It's in the Bible. You know, take a look at Benjamin's mother there, you know. And so we realize that there are emergencies that can happen, but it's a very small percentage of the time. And these hospitals are only there so that if you don't do all the things they say you want to do, even though that you know otherwise, the shots that you want to give me, the vaccines you want to give my child, the actions you want to take, the force of forcing me to have a C-section when I don't need one and I don't want one. But if you get a C-section, the hospital is going to make $35,000 as opposed to $15,000. So which one are they going to do? As long as you got insurance, they're going to do the one that's going to pay more. And so if you say no to anything a doctor says, that's it. One call does it all. We're calling CPS on you. And it's what they call AMA, against medical advice. Anything you do that's AMA is grounds for a call to CPS. So unless everything about you is perfect, and unless you are a 100% a conformer to what they say, take this shot, take these pills, take this medicine, get this surgery, follow our protocol, take these supplements that are not actual supplements, do this, do that, do all these things that they tell you have to do, you're just one bad conversation away from a call to CPS, and they're going to take your child away. And so you've got to stay away from these allopathic hospitals. Do not ever go again. Well, Diego, that's serious. You know, what if I get in a car accident? Car accidents are different. In my opinion, I think that's the only reason that anybody should ever go to an allopathic hospital is when you have physical harm to your body that needs to be repaired. Then a hospital has surgeons who repair your body. That's more like mechanical biology. But when it comes to healthcare, when it has to do with health, hospitals are so dangerous. They're the most dangerous thing. So you should never voluntarily walk into one. That's the first thing I would say that people need to do. The second thing I would encourage people to do is to make friends with your neighbors. We ought to, you know, the whole concept of being in a community, which used to be the bedrock of the American experience, is now gone. You can be a Christian and your neighbors can be non-Christians and you can still be friends with them. And your testimony over time might even win them over, but at least you should have a good relationship with them. You know, that you're growing food and they're growing food and you guys share food. I mean, I remember growing up, brother, we had pomegranates and lemons and walnut trees on our property. And I'm talking about in a subdivision in a major city, because that's how it was back in the day. And now, of course, nobody has any fruit trees because they don't want us being self-sufficient, independent. And even the people who didn't have the same beliefs as us, is they were sharing their lemons and their tomatoes with us. And we shared our plums and our walnuts with them, because nobody could eat all the food in their trees. So the communities were all shared one with another. And you knew all your neighbors. You knew them by name. The kids knew one another. Everybody played in the front yard. Everybody knew who everybody was. And you all learned how to have good communities. And now everybody stays at home. They're on their computers. They're on their internet. Mother and father are working. Everybody, nobody knows one another. Nobody's sharing anything one with another. And you need to know who your neighbors are. Because otherwise, if you're a homeschool family and your neighbor is some socialist, they just hate you politically. And one call does it all. And all of a sudden, one day they see your kids out playing in the front and they don't like you. And they're just going to make an anonymous phone call. I think my neighbor's kids are in danger. That's it. Knock on the door and a CPS social worker involved. And that's all it takes. That is literally all it takes. Ugh. And if you then take the wrong steps at that point, because you're ignorant to what happens and you think, I've got nothing to hide, come into my house. That's the next step you need to make sure. Never, ever let a police officer or a social worker into your house. Ever. Never, never, ever, 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 never, never, never. Because no matter how perfect your life is, how perfect your home is, how perfect everything is, they will find a reason. They invent reasons. And it's at the discretion, not of the cops, but of the social worker. Most social workers across the country are socialists, leftists, and lesbians. Literally. I'm not trying to be funny or you know, just throw dirt at them. That's just the reality of what it is. They're attracted to that. And all it takes is 2 weeks of training and you're in. And so you got to learn to not only know your neighbors and befriend your neighbors, but you're also going to want your neighbors to be there so you can call on them to help defend you. So it's not only so that they don't call CPS on you, but it's also because you want your neighbors to be able to be there to defend you when tyranny is at your front door. So it's just part of building a strong support network. And number three, I will give a huge shout of support to two different organizations that I imagine you both support and probably are a member of. And one of them is a Homeschool Legal Defense Association, the HSLDA. Go to their website today. sign up. If you're a homeschooler, I think everybody needs to be connected with them. And in addition to, there is another organization called Heritage Defense, which has some overlap with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, but join them immediately. This is an organization that will fight for your rights and help prevent tyranny happening at your front door from a legal perspective. Join these organizations and follow the instructions they have. Don't let anybody in your front door. Don't talk to police officers. Call them immediately if you're ever contacted by CPS, and they will help ensure that your children are not taken away. And so last but not least, there's another organization that I just want to encourage people to look up. And this organization probably has more influence in seeing to baby Cyrus's safe return than any other organization. That's the People's Rights Network. And this is not connected to homeschoolers, to a Christian organization, nothing. It's just a loose network. It's not an actual organization, but it is a network of people who believe in fighting against tyranny. And the whole idea is, how do we prevent tyranny? Well, the way we prevent tyranny is by neighbors protecting neighbors, people protecting one another. That if Curtis has, you know, tyranny coming out against his family, that Diego and his family will come and stand for his rights, and that Curtis's neighbors will stand for his rights. And so it's called People's Rights. And the idea is for networks of people all across the country to be able to have a communication system where if tyranny has come to your front door, you call on that system and people show up and stand between you and the tyrants. And that's exactly what happened with baby Cyrus. And it's been used very successfully, peacefully, always peacefully. But what happens is, what we found is, police officers, judges, politicians, none of these people care about the law. They just don't, because there's no consequences. The only thing they care about is social pressure and public shame. That's what they care about. So if they can kidnap your child and there's no consequences, they'll do it all day long. But if 100 people show up to prevent you from kidnapping their child, and they're all sharing it with all their network of people, they're afraid to be on those videos. They don't want people to know that they're tyrants. They're afraid of that public shaming. And so if they see all these people standing between them, the People's Rights Network has been successfully used to see children returned to their families, to see all different types of things in terms of tyranny being shut down across the country. And it was started, if you will, by my friend Ammon Bundy. And he started that network, and it's been very successful. It was one of the things that brought so many people out in support of baby Cyrus. And it's, my experience with it has been, it's mostly Christian people who are involved. So that means there's a lot of prayer involved. People are out there praying, just like your network and support people are. But it's people from all walks of life. It really is. I think probably like the audience you have with Agenda, where there's obviously a lot of Christians involved, but there's people from all walks of life that are watching what you have to share because they're concerned with tyranny, no matter what their own ideology is.
Diego, I appreciate you joining me today. I'm so thankful to have you come on and just give us an update and let us know about this and educate us on this. I really appreciate you. Well, I hope you learned a lot from that. It's an unbelievable story, but it's not an uncommon story. It happens over 1,000 times every single day. Yes, I'm sure a few of the cases are legitimate and the children were in danger, but like they even said, 83%+ of the time, they're not. And it's just rotten that it's that poor in performing its duties. But I just want you to consider going to babycyrus.com. That's where you can see all the videos, all the information on everything they've put forward to show what happened, show how evil the government was to do the things that it did. They also have a Give, Send, Go campaign going to raise money to pay lawyers to go back after the state of Idaho and the hospital and everything. If you have extra money and God's blessed you, please go to babycyrus.com and make a donation to help them be able to afford the lawyers to make sure the state of Idaho realizes in the future you can't just abuse a family because you don't like them. That's not the proper role of government or the police force or these different agencies. So anyway, babycyrus.com. I encourage you to go there for any questions you might have or to find out more details about this story. Our verse for this week is Psalm 118:1. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good. because his mercy endureth forever. I'm so thankful that is true. He is good and he is so merciful. And I'm so grateful for you and appreciate you being a part of what we do here at Agenda Weekly. I hope you have a great week, and until next week, God bless you.